Hello, and welcome to the Rooted in Reliability podcast, your plant performance podcast, where we dive deeper into asset management techniques and know-how. I'm your host, James Kovacevic, and I will be your guide to achieving industry best practice. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is here to provide you with the insights to improve plant performance and deliver bottom-line results to your organization. In case you missed the last episode, you can find the Rooted in Reliability podcast on iTunes, Stitcher, and on the reliability.fm network. Don't forget to subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Now let's dive into today's topic. It is my pleasure to welcome back Ron Moore to the podcast. Welcome back, Ron.
Thank you.
For those that may not be familiar with Ron, you are the managing partner of the RM Group for over 20 plus years. You also have a bachelor's and master's of science in mechanical engineering, an MBA, you're a professional engineer, and you got your CMRP. In addition to that, you're a great keynote speaker. I had the opportunity to sit through one of your keynotes before. And lastly, you're an author of many books that sit on my shelf. So Making Common Sense Common Practice, What Tool When, Where Do We Start Our Improvement Program, Business Fables and Four, Business Fables and House. How do you say that, Rob? Ron?
Foibles.
Okay. Business Fables and Foibles. Our transport journey, and more than 60 papers throughout your career. What did I miss, Ron, that you want to cover in your bio?
No, that's plenty. That's enough.
All right. Perfect. So you've been with R&M Group for over 20 plus years, but how long have you been involved in maintenance and reliability?
I would say roughly 30 years. I was president of CSI. They made the predictive maintenance tools in its formative years. So it's been since about 1988.
Excellent. So a wide range of experience with maintenance, with reliability, with predictive systems. Now, as a respected thought leader in this industry, would you give us your definition of reliability?
Sure. It's really simple, and it's something the shop floor can relate to, and that is stuff works when you want it to. And I know the SMRP definition, and I know the SAE definition, but those are kind of engineering speak, and I try to relate stuff to the shop floor. So stuff works when you want it to, and in maintainability, stuff's easy to fix. So, and I think most folks can relate to that really simple definition.
Yes, I would agree. The other definitions can get a little intimidating at times. Now, who is responsible for that reliability in a plant?
Well, I think everybody. It's very much like safety. Everyone has a role to play, and particularly in defect elimination. Everyone has a role to play in working with others to minimize the risk of failures and defects. So it's no question in my mind, it's everyone. It's not just maintenance. In fact, if all you do is maintenance, you'll only do more efficiently work that you should not be doing at all.
Absolutely.
So everybody plays a role.
Perfect. And that sounds very similar to a safety program, correct?
Yes, very much so. What I've found that there's a really high correlation between reliability and safety. If you look at the data and that set of slides I sent you that you feel free to share with everyone. Just for example, as OEE, overall equipment effectiveness, improves, injury rate goes down because you aren't out in the plant thrashing around all the time, taking shortcuts. And I've got about 6-7 data sets on that. The other thing is that as you do more PM and PDM, predictive maintenance type work that's planned and scheduled, injury rate goes down. And the reciprocal of that, as you do more reactive and unplanned work, injury rate goes up. As your maintenance schedule compliance improves, you see fewer injuries because things are in control and capable and done according to a standard or a process. So all that data just suggests to me that, if safety is a high priority for you, then reliability is a must.
Yeah, it sounds that, everyone being responsible for reliability, for safety, and the correlation for those is there. Why don't organizations adopt reliability as much as they do safety in terms of developing that culture of reliability, that discipline to reliability standards, and monitor the performance of it very intensively like they do a safety program?
Well, I don't think there's an appreciation, particularly at the executive level, for a good reliability program. And in fact, I think most of them view reliability as a maintenance function. And in truth, maintenance only directly controls about 10% of all the production losses in a given plant, and only controls about a third of all the equipment failures. Most of the failures and losses are generated upstream in design, procurement, and particularly in operations. And so long as the executives view reliability as a maintenance function, which most of them don't really understand and don't want to get involved in, then you're not going to have that emphasis, that leadership for improving things.
But if it's directly related to safety improvement, safety performance, and I'm assuming there's going to be a link somewhere for quality as well, why don't they push that then? Or is it just a lack of understanding that reliability is a foundation for these other things?
Yeah, it is. They just simply do not understand. And, you know, a phrase that I've used on occasion is profound ignorance. And, you know, these are smart people. They just don't know the impact that a good reliability program can have that involves everyone, you know, design, production, and maintenance. And so it's really important that we educate those guys on the benefit of reliability, but with maintenance as a support function, not necessarily a lead function.
Ah, very good. Now, in a lot of you have a lot of data relating to how reliable the plant is versus safety performance, a variety of other metrics like you mentioned. But who is most likely to be injured in the plant as with that data set that you have, that you've uncovered over time?
Yeah, well, DuPont found, and this has been years ago now, but what they found was the person most likely to be injured is a maintenance technician with less than 2 years experience doing reactive work. Another data set, what ExxonMobil found was that you're five times more likely to be injured doing maintenance when you're doing unplanned or unscheduled work and you're doing breakdown work. And, you know, that's pretty compelling evidence that, you know, you really need to have good maintenance programs. But more importantly, I think you need a defect elimination program that involves everybody in the plant so you minimize the risk of failures, so you don't have to do reactive maintenance.
Absolutely. So that reliability program, you know, it helps with the newer staff, like you mentioned in DuPont. It reduces that unplanned work that you mentioned in Exxon. So that way we have time to understand the potential risks of a job. We can plan accordingly. We're not rushed, so we can prevent those incidents. Correct?
Yeah, that's correct. And I mean, other, you know, the pulp and paper industry found the same thing. You know, there's just a lot of evidence out there that if you don't eliminate the defects, stop the work happening, being required in the first place, and the work that you do have it planned and scheduled, then you got a much higher risk of injury. And by the way, when you have a good reliability program, you have lower costs. And I've got data on that as well.
So
the benefit of financial and safety and environmental, I've got data on that as well. I don't have as much data on quality, but I have no doubt that there's a correlation.
Excellent. Now, you mentioned having a robust defect elimination program. So as you uncover issues, you know, using root cause analysis to figure out what's going on and remove those defects from occurring and not just trying to PM them out, but addressing them different ways. Is there a correlation between the number of those types of defects you find and a major incident?
Yeah, and this is work done by Winston LaDay. What he found was the more defects you have, the higher the risk of a major incident. And then a fellow named John Hopkins, he's from Australia, he found that the more process errors you have, the greater risk of a major accident. So the process errors, you can think of those as defects in the operation of the equipment and the processes. And the defects themselves are the things that are wrong with the equipment. And the more of those you have, the greater the risk of injury and the greater risk of a major incident like an explosion or a death occurs.
Excellent. And what do you happen to know what that relationship is, or there that correlation between the number of defects and a major incident?
Well, according to Winslow and Day's research, for every roughly 20,000 defects, you'll have 6,500 repair work orders. Out of that will come 10 losses that are significant to you. And out of that will be one major accident or incident. So, you know, it's in my mind, it's fairly compelling. Now, a defect, what is a defect? A defect is any imperfection. So a defect might be a worn bearing. A defect might be an inadequate startup procedure on a machine. A defect might be poor training of the people to operate the plant. You know, defects aren't limited to the equipment. Defects are pervasive in most operations, and most of them are relatively small and then seemingly inconsequential until you have, for example, 20,000 of them. And when you have that many, they're going to converge a la the Swiss cheese model to create a major incident.
Yeah, so if we leverage a defect elimination program and say cut those 20,000 down to 10,000, we essentially reduce our risk to a major incident by half, correct?
That's correct. Yeah. And by the way, how many people does it take to, you know, eliminate 10,000 defects? All of them. Everybody has to be involved.
Yes,
So
absolutely.
again, it's not just a maintenance thing. It has to involve everyone.
Now, understanding that relationship between reliability and safety, how can organizations leverage that relationship for the better? Now that we understand that safety is very directly tied to reliability, environmental performance is tied to reliability, how do we leverage that to improve the organizations?
Well, I think that information, that data, has to get in front of the senior management, and, you know, the executives in a given corporation, because all of them, you know, everywhere I've been, and I've done, you know, workshops and seminars for, you know, CEOs and exec VPs and so on. But one of the points I hammer on with them is, well, first of all, ask the question, do you believe in safety? And of course they do. That's not a question. And then I will suggest to them that maybe not so much, because I've had a look around their plants and their reliability practices aren't all that flash hot. And from there we have a discussion, you know, about the importance of their sponsorship, their active engagement in driving a reliability improvement effort. They can't just give people permission. They have to be active sponsors, you know, reward, punish, support, measure, encourage, provide resources, and so on.
So what we need to do is model our reliability program off of the safety program and some and those aspects where we have active leadership support, active leadership engagement. We get proper training for everyone in the facility, just like we do for safety training and so on and so forth, correct?
Yeah, that's right. You know, it's a combination of activities. And if you've ever been through a safety improvement program, of course, you know it requires top-down leadership, you know, their sponsorship, if you will, active engagement. But it also requires bottom-up ownership and employee engagement. And then lots of other things like education and training, action plans, visual communication, standards and procedures, and so on. And what you're trying to do here is drive it to the point where it becomes an ethos, a culture, a way of life, and not just some, you know, program or tool that you initiate and it has some success and then dies when that person leaves. So you want to inculcate the ethos within the organization.
Now, how can our listeners do that? How do they start driving it to that, driving that reliability program to the same level as a safety program? Is it more than just that training? Well, how do they get leadership on board? How do they get fellow employees on board?
Well, First of all, I think if you're going to the executive level, you have to present a business case. And what I've found is that if you have a proper reliability program, you will reduce your maintenance costs by about 10%. It could be a lot more than that, but that's a nominal, sort of a minimal amount. And it depends on where you currently are. If you're already really good, it's not quite that much. But let's say it's 10% of your total maintenance costs. Well, what's that? You know, what is that number? But I've also found that when you do this, what you're looking at is something on the order of a 10% improvement in production capacity. Now, if you can sell that and you've got, say, a 30% gross profit, that's worth, depends on the organization, excuse me, but that's worth anywhere from 2 to 5 times as much as the reduced maintenance costs. So, you know, it's a pretty significant value that you're looking at. And then you link that to safety in the sense that safety is a top priority. Well, given that, then reliability should be as well, because it's both financially beneficial and you get an improvement in the reduction of risk of injury to the, you know, and the reduction in the risk of a major accident, like an explosion.
This podcast is brought to you by Iridicio. Be sure to check out iridicio.com for a free copy of their ebook, A Smarter Way of Preventative Maintenance. This ebook will allow you to review your current maintenance program and eliminate the non-value-added work you're doing, which is most likely causing you more downtime than it is preventing. www.iridicio.com. Absolutely. So you build that business case, you link it to safety, you link it to environmental performance, referencing maybe some of the data that you have in your slides as examples. But one of the things I've commonly seen is when you go to present that business case, you get pushback. And when I say pushback, I mean senior leadership will say there's no way we're mismanaging our plant to that level where we're missing 10% production opportunity. How do you overcome that?
Well, you look at the data. You know, a typical discrete manufacturing plant has a OEE or asset utilization on the order of 60%. Well, world class is 85. So a 10% improvement would be 66%. Well, golly, you know, that's still pretty ordinary. For a process plant, what you typically see is somewhere around 75-80% asset utilization. And a world class outfit would be up around 90. I've even seen 95%. Well, a 10% improvement, you know, would take them up to from 75 to 82. Well, you're still pretty significantly below something akin to world class. So you look at the data and you see where they are and you see what you might be able to expect in a really well-run organization, and you make the case.
Yeah, so you have to have that data. You have to be able to not only have your own internal data to show that hidden plant, if you will, but also what others in your industry are able to achieve, correct? You have to bring both?
Yeah, that's correct. And, you know, what I typically do is go in and do a little assessment of their current practices. And some of that self-assessment, are you guys doing this? Are you doing that? Are you doing, you know, any number of things that would reflect the best practice standard? And generally speaking, they're doing some of those things, or even most of those things, but many of them, they're not doing particularly well. And so that becomes a gap in their practices, which also drives their performance.
Yes, absolutely. So there is a very strong correlation between reliability and safety, environmental performance, cost reduction, and so on and so forth. Are there any other thoughts on that link that maybe we didn't cover that you want to make sure our listeners are aware of?
Well, I think if you're going to achieve a superior level of performance, I think, you know, step one is you got to have executive sponsorship. I mentioned that earlier. And the sponsorship is not just permission. Okay, I give you permission, now go do wonderful things and bring it back when you've got it. It's again, it's active participation, engagement in the process. The second thing you got to have is what I think of as a production and maintenance partnership. And it has to be production led, because most of the losses in production and defects in equipment are induced as a result of that. And not only that, you typically have something like 3 to 5 times as many production people as you do maintenance people. So they have to be involved in the improvement process. And to go with that, to facilitate their partnership, their cooperation, there need to be cross-functional measures that they share. So, for example, I would have production and maintenance share maintenance schedule compliance. So when maintenance wants to, I mean, when production wants to postpone maintenance, that hits their pocketbook. But I would also have the maintenance guys responsible for on-time delivery. They share that with production. So when they want to do maintenance and it affects production, it hits their pocketbook. And when you have those measures that are a little bit, create a little bit of tension between the functional groups, but they share them, then they have to work together to do what's appropriate for the business at that moment. And you get better performance when you have that. And then the last thing is having some sort of structured improvement time for shop floor engagement. You know, the philosophy I have is, if you want to understand the problems with the work, talk to the workers. And we don't really have enough of that, because they know where all the day-to-day problems are. And if you set up, say, a weekly half day or a monthly full day to do problem solving and improve the equipment and the processes, they will have a sense of purpose and ownership and control over that. And you get much more engagement of them. So those are the three things, you know, executive sponsorship, production maintenance partnership, along with cross-functional measures, and then structured improvement time to engage the shop floor.
Those are three great things on how to drive this forward, how to move this forward, and keep it sustained. So definitely great, great information to start with, and how to build your program. Now, what is the one thing that you think makes the biggest difference between being both safe and reliable for organizations?
Well, the one thing, I suppose, is executive sponsorship. But there's a corollary and addendum to that, and that is reliability, I think, must be production-led in a manufacturing environment. And again, it's because they control the equipment, they control the processes, and so on. And maintenance is a support function. You know, the analogy I use is, you know, what about your car? You know, you can't expect the mechanic at the garage to own the reliability of your car. You're the operator. You're in control of it. You have to manage that. So I'm just convinced that in a production environment, it has to be production-led, with maintenance and support, with those cross-functional measures.
Excellent. And I have to agree with you. There's been numerous times where I've had to dig up the data to support that this wasn't a maintenance-led or maintenance-induced failure and so on and so forth, but it was the fact that equipment was either A, operated properly, B, wrong raw materials were used, it was operated out of its design parameters, stuff like that. And those commonly get lumped into the maintenance bucket, but like you said, they're not, and that's where the vast majority of issues come from. So we need production to lead that improvement.
Yeah. Amen.
Now, if you had a magic wand, what is the one thing you would change in a typical reliability program in a facility?
I just said it. It'd be production led.
All right, excellent. Now, when I was first introduced to this concept, I was at a facility where they were pushing those cross-functional measures, and I was still early in my career, and I didn't really understand why. So all of a sudden now, the operations manager, his performance measure shared with maintenance was PM compliance. And it didn't make any sense to me at the time. But as I started to learn more, understand how people use measures, understand the relationship between maintenance and operations and those sorts of things, it started to make a lot of sense. And even to this day, I will mention that to facilities and planners and maintenance managers and so on and so forth. And they'll look at me like I am crazy because I want the operations manager to have PM compliance on his list of performance metrics. How do you overcome some of that?
Well, with executive sponsorship and with the data that that's in that set of slides I sent you is the only way that I know how. You know, I just had a little flashback. I once told some of the leadership of a big, big global company, you know, they wanted to improve their reliability, and they were talking about all the techniques and tools and whatnot they were using. I said, look, you don't have a technical problem. You've got a social problem. And what I meant by that was you don't have folks aligned to a common purpose and working together to address the problems you've got within the plant. That's in my mind, that's a social or a cultural problem. You can use all the tools in the world, and you'll get a little bit of improvement of those tools, but if people aren't working together to a common purpose, if we're not engaging the shop floor in defect elimination, that improvement will be small and short-lived.
Exactly. As soon as the focus comes off of that, they'll kind of slide back to where they were. If it's not ingrained in their culture, it's not part of their culture, if you will.
Right.
Now, what is the one action you want our listeners to take away from the conversation today on the link between reliability and safety? What do you want them to go to their plants and do differently?
Well, I'm not sure they have the authority to do the things that we've just described. But what I would like them to do is begin talking up this relationship between safety and reliability and the need for a production-led approach to it. And I think those slides I sent you will give them a basis for doing that, and at least I hope so. So, you know, I think that would serve them well. And it may be a long slog. You know, you won't get any converts straight away in most cases, but you keep hammering on that. It's a little bit like driving a nail through a knot hole. You can't hit it too hard and you can't hit it too soft, but you got to keep hitting it.
Yes, absolutely. So to make that easier for everyone, I'm going to make sure there's a link in the show notes to those slides that Ron, you keep referring to. That way everyone can access them. And it has not only the data, but some of the other things that you have done and seen in your past experiences to build that culture, having a safety and reliability policy, and so on and so forth. So I'll make sure those are available in the show notes for everyone so they can start that process of communicating and creating awareness and so on and so forth towards the long-term goal of building a reliability culture.
Yeah.
Now, Ron,
okay.
We're going to share those. I want to thank you for taking the time today to talk about the link between reliability and safety with us. I'm going to provide a link to those slides you provided. But do you have any other resources you want to mention to our listeners that may be available?
Well, the books, if you're interested in any of the books, they're available at a website, mro-zone.com. That's Terry O'Hanlon's reliability website for the books. So you can go there and search on Ron Moore. You could Google Ron Moore books. Now, Ron Moore is a very common name. It's a bit like Jim Smith. So some of those are mine and some of them aren't. But Making Common Sense, Common Practice, What Tool When, Where Do We Start Our Improvement Program, those would probably be of most interest to most of the folks.
All right, excellent. I will make sure to put links to those in the show notes as well. Once again, Ron, I want to thank you for taking the time out of your day today to talk about the link between reliability and safety. It's important that everyone understands this relationship. Not just from a maintenance perspective, but from an operations perspective, a leadership perspective, and so on and so forth. And I think we provided a great intro to that today. So thank you once again.
Well, my pleasure, and I wish everybody well. I hope they can take some of this and run with it.
Excellent. I would like to thank you for listening and remind you that you can always find out more on maintenance, reliability, and asset management at www.iridicio.com and by following our blog. The Rooted in Reliability podcast is a proud member of the Reliability.fm network. I'd like to ask you to please rate and review this podcast on iTunes or Stitcher. It ensures the podcast stays relevant and is easy to find by like-minded professionals. It is only with your ratings and reviews that the Rooted in Reliability podcast can continue to grow. I thank you for providing this small but critical support. We'll see you next week when we dive into another burning topic with Rooted in Reliability, your plant performance podcast.